Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Arto Cal here with you every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN, YouTube. A lot happened this weekend, Wish. Trade deadline has come and gone. We have Shayna Goldman to break that all down later in the program. I like this tradition that we're continuing on the Tuesday edition, where we give winners and losers from the weekend of NHL action and news and notes. So why don't you kick us off? Give us a winner or loser from the weekend.
The New York Hockey Islanders, baby! The Magic's back! The Magic's back! We all thought that maybe Patrick Waugh came aboard a little bit too late. Remember, he came on around January 20th, I think it was. But he had enough runway to get this team in shape. And let me give you a stat going forward here. From the time Patrick Waugh took over to now, when the Islanders are on an absolute heater and are in a playoff spot as we do this show, they are the second best team in expected goals against at 5-on-5. That is up from 27th, Arda, under Lane Lambert, previous to his firing. So Patrick Waugh wanted to increase their compete level, wanted to get them playing better. The Islanders have responded in kind, and they are currently looking like a playoff team. And I guess kudos to Lou Lamoriello. While a lot of us were like, hey, man, you've got a veteran roster locked in for several years, maybe make some moves at the deadline to change the configuration. He's like, I am doubling down. And everybody stayed. Patrick Waugh is the coach. The vibes are back. The vibes are good. And the Islanders are right now in a playoff position.
Sorry, first of all, was that Lou Lamoriello or Chief Quimby you just did there?
It is. First of all, it's Mayor Quimby. Don't confuse him with Chief Wiggum. Yeah. And yes. As the people who have listened to me on podcasts for a long time know, I only do 9 impressions and I just repurpose them for when I need to do them.
Got it. Mayor Quimby is assuming the role of Lou Lamoriello in this case.
Wears a sash that says president and general manager at all times.
Mayor says mayor on his. Got it. So UBS Arena has now been transformed for the time being to Fort, maybe never lose. I guess we will find out in the near future. Loser
is the Detroit Red Wings. Uh-oh, trouble. Obviously, the Dylan Larkin injury is something they couldn't have foreseen. But as we speak right now, the Detroit Red Wings, according to Stathletes, have a smaller probability of making the playoffs than do the Lightning, the Islanders, the Flyers, and the Washington Capitals, who are very much not out of this thing. You know, 'twas a time a few weeks ago, Arda, when we were thinking to ourselves how exciting it was going to be to have the Red Wings back in the playoff party. The wobble is real. The Islanders are hot. There are other teams nipping at their heels. I'm a little bit concerned about the Red Wings and therefore a little bit concerned that Patrick Kane backed the wrong horse.
Yeah, so we'll and trade deadline has come and gone, so the Red Wings definitely going for it with Patrick Kane. There was a little part of me that thought, you know, if things were going really south for the Red Wings well before the trade deadline, that Patrick Kane might have been one of the names on the move, but obviously that is not the case.
It's possible, you know, I agree, but I've heard that, you know, I think Emily Kaplan, our colleague, reported that they actually were talking extension with Patrick Kane beyond this season. So, cool. You know, even if they don't make the playoffs, he clearly feels it's been a good fit for him. And again, like you mentioned the trade deadline, they are still maybe a little bit ahead of schedule. They still have a bunch of young players in the system, young players that are still going to, you know, mature and become good NHL players. I don't think that Yzerman needed to overreact at the trade deadline, but it is kind of a disappointment if they go this far down the road and don't actually make the playoff cut.
Another name that did not move at the trade deadline, Marc-Andre Fleury, but he did move to the bench in overtime. I will take this winner. John Hines with the very, very confident move and rare in the NHL of pulling your goaltender in overtime. A lot of people learning in the hockey world that if the Wild had lost that game when the goalie was pulled, they would have lost their regulation point in that situation. But that wasn't the case because they won the game. So it worked out. So now John Hines looks like a hero and the Minnesota Wild pick up a very, very valuable extra point. I love it. It made for some excellent drama in that game.
Yeah. Fortune favors the Boldy because Matt Boldy scored the game winner in the game. Yeah. Rule 84-2 in your rule books at home. You can check it out. They would have lost their regulation tie point if they had gotten scored on into an empty net in that situation. Look, man, in another situation, maybe not my favorite move. When you are playing the team that you are trying to track down and the days are getting short in the regular season, by all means. And again, logistically, it gives you a tremendous advantage if you have the right personnel on the ice where you can get someone back to play kind of that rover sweeper position to protect your own goal. Clearly, the other three guys on the opposing team are going to be, you know, pinned in their own zone, defending what's essentially a 4-on-3 power play. I hope that other people take a note from this and other teams get bold in the 3-on-3 to try this gambit. But again, John Hines, like the last person you'd expect to try it. John Cooper, you know, sure. Patrick Waugh, sure. John Hines, but give him credit. I mean, even his own players didn't understand the rule, and he pulled this one out of his hat.
And it worked out. Loser.
Well, you were there, Arda. The loser obviously has to be Cricket and Sidney Crosby for losing the Big City Greens Classic, right? I mean, my God, Grandma comes away with the big W. Those two take the L. I mean, what was the reaction like after the game from Cricket?
Yeah, Cricket wasn't happy. Cricket was like, I don't know if I can recover from this. Grandma was super confident. That whole experience, the opposite of loser, by the way, that was my winner from the weekend. It was a flawless production. It was terrific to be a part of. And shout out to the entire crew behind the scenes, because I don't think people truly understand the magnitude of a project like this and all the moving parts. You saw the clips on social media, like ESPN put out a bunch of clips where you saw the actual game and then the Big City Greens game and both of them in real time and just the real time tracking, etc. This is obviously the second time this has happened, and we've done a Toy Story version in the NFL as well, but this was terrific. Like, just being and this was the first time we used VR headsets. Last year it was motion capture suits similar to video game. You know, like when people are doing mocap for a video game, they had the bulbs all over them and it's like a full suit. We were only wearing VR headsets and it captured everything, like your hand movements. You could interlock and it would capture it all. Like, it was really, really impressive. So I just want to give a shout out to the entire crew, because it was a monumental task executed very, very well. But yes, Cricket is very upset.
I know you're a little sad that you couldn't climb into a Green Men like bodysuit to try to do this. I mean, I know that you've got the body for it. I know you're a little upset you couldn't have achieved that career goal. As far as the Penguins go, I do want to touch on some comments made by our colleague PK Subban recently regarding Kyle Dubas, their general manager, claiming that Dubas hasn't done right by Sidney Crosby and isn't giving him a chance to make the playoffs. Look, Ron Hextall tried to surround Crosby with talent to try to get the Penguins a cup. He ended up surrounding him with bad contracts and ineffective talent. Kyle Dubas comes in. His first task is to try to get rid of those contracts and those bad players. And he pulled a rabbit out of his hat. He traded for Erik Karlsson and in the process shed a bunch of those contracts. And Carlson's not been the problem this year. In fact, I think he did well in trying to get a player to help the Penguins. The real issue I have with PK's comments is that Dubas is just doing what ownership has asked him to do. Okay, the Jake Guentzel trade is a microcosm of his task, which is do your best to try to help the core now, but ultimately your job is to start looking towards the future. Hextall wasn't tasked with that. Dubas has been. And so when you see a guy like Jake Guentzel go, it's because Dubas knows he has very few chips to play, cards to play here to get chips back in his pot. So he played the Guentzel card. Yeah, it sucks that Crosby loses his line mate, but ultimately it's to serve the other part of his task given to him by ownership, okay, which is to start pivoting towards the future. So in their defense, I think that Dubas is just basically doing what he's been kind of told to do in his position.
The other part of this is I do think it's admirable that Sidney Crosby doesn't want to go anywhere. We talked, like you said, on our last podcast, Rob Rossi joined us two podcasts ago and said, look, it's like a minus 1000% chance that Sidney Crosby wants to go and chase a cup with another team. He would sooner stay with the Penguins through the rebuild and, you know, be a cup contender in his 40s, if anything. Yeah. So I find that admirable, because you don't often see that in the NHL or even see hockey players in that kind of position to be able to execute that. So,
yeah.
Right. Winner, Pennsylvania Rivals.
Easy winner for me, baby. That'd be Flyers CEO Dan Hilferty. For those who don't know, of course you know by now, I imagine, if you're a hockey fan, John Tortorella gets a 2-game suspension and a fine from the NHL for refusing to leave the bench after getting ejected from the game, the Flyers game over the weekend. I'm going to use the Celsius can. He did the Jordan Belfort thing from Wolf of Wall Street. I'm not going. I'm not leaving. and then he stayed. And there was a part of me, Arda, that was a little bit concerned that we were going to see John Tortorella dragged out by his ankles by arena security at some point because he refused to leave the bench after getting kicked out. Did not work out that way. But Hillsbury, to his credit, told Al Morganti after this incident, "I'm really proud of Torts for standing up for his team and our team. This is the new era of Orange, and it's all about having each other's backs. Last night, Torts had our collective backs. I respect any action the league might feel a need to take on, but if it includes a fine, I'm paying it." How awesome is it to have the Flyers rally behind their coach receiving a suspension for basically a childish refusal to leave the bench after being ejected and saying they're going to cover the fine? It's perfect.
Yeah, that's the best. You love to see it. And talk about buy-in, right? Like, it's funny, like, the era too, right? Like, if this was like Torts of several years ago, it's almost like the paradigm league wide among hockey fans of John Tortorella is at a different place today. It's the same Torts. It's just the impression or the paradigm of Torts has changed a little bit.
Well, he's gone from suits to zip up sweaters. Like he's in his grandpa era, and that's great. I asked Mark Stahl about that when I wrote about the Flyers a couple weeks ago on ESPN.com about the idea of like who was the Tortorella you knew when you were with the Rangers and who was the Tortorella you're with now in Philadelphia. And he said philosophically he's the same guy, but he has mellowed. And he also is kind of a less of a micromanager. He's kind of hands off on the players, lets his assistants do a lot of the work and practices and things like that. So I think the thing that was interesting about this moment is that Tortorella has found ways in the last few years in how to manage his emotions and not be the same firebrand as he was previously. And in fact, later in the podcast, we'll count down some of the more famous Tortorella moments during those years. So it's crazy to say, Arda, but this was almost out of character for the coach that John Tortorella has become in this league.
I do want to say one of my favorite things this weekend in the hockey bubble on social media was people bringing up that Torts got 2 games for basically yelling and elongating his departure after being ejected. But meanwhile, back in the day, Devils coach Robbie Fatorik got 1 game for throwing a bench on the ice.
Yeah. Exactly. But then he left. I mean, obviously the real sin here is delaying the game and refusal to leave the bench, more important than smashing furniture on the ice. Yes. Loser, easy one for me, Arda. We didn't get to hear from the refs. I it's a situation where we needed to know more about what went on between Tortorella and Wes McCauley, the referee, or Wes's officiating partner on the game. We don't know what happened. We don't know why this happened. We don't know what set Torts off. We don't know if this is just him trying to Lupinella the situation, to use a baseball reference, and have the manager come out of the dugout and brush a bunch of dirt on the umpire's feet until he gets kicked out, because it was a 4-0 game at that point for the Flyers losing in that game. We don't know what happened. And it always irks me as a journalist that we don't have access to the officials or you know, to the NHL more to understand exactly what the dynamic was in this deal. I have heard from sources that it's not anything beyond the pale that Torts said or did. Okay. But clearly it was enough to get him ejected. And I wish we had some idea what went on there.
So as you mentioned, Wish, we will break down some of Torts's finer moments in the National Hockey League a little bit later on in the show. But first, let's bring on an old friend to the program so that we can dive into all things trade deadline and more. So the trade deadline has come and gone. A better time to bring on our good friend Shayna Goldman of The Athletic to break down all things trade deadline and some of the news and notes from the weekend in the NHL. Also, the Too Many Med podcast. They have a terrific Nintendo Switch cover that I purchased back in the day. Shayna, you're the best. Welcome again. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. And for buying the Too Many Med Switch case. We'd love to hear that.
That's great stuff.
It definitely gets some good use.
We don't even have a coffee mug on the drop, and you guys are making gear for video game systems. It's pretty dope.
You guys have graduated to like elite level merch, and we're struggling to get one off the ground. Speaking of struggling, a lot of teams battling in that wild card area. Why don't we start with a very unorthodox, but in Minnesota's case, effective move. They pull the goalie in overtime. Very risky move. They could have lost that extra point, but they did not. They ended up with 2 points. They definitely need points. Coach John Hines looking like a hero at the moment in the city of Minneapolis or the state of Minnesota, Shayna. But what do you make of that situation where we don't see it often, but John Hines does it? They win, they get the 2 points, they score the goal in overtime. But what did you make of him pulling the goalie in overtime?
Well, number one, we got the shock value, which I think everybody got the shock value, which is what made it so effective. Nobody could have seen that move coming because we never see it happen, right? And I think the best part of it is that some of the players didn't even know that you could lose the point if you allowed the goal with the net empty, which I feel like takes a little bit of pressure off the players. If it happens again, it's not going to take teams by surprise necessarily. But I like that it's a bold move because the Wild, if anything, they're the Minnesota Mild in so many ways. But you look at it, their 3-on-3 strategies. They've been a really good team in 3-on-3 situations. They've been a really good team in years past in 6-on-5 situations. So this is a team that knows how to play with an empty net and knows how to rise to the occasion when they need to. Here, it's so intriguing. I love that it's Faber coming off for a forward to come on. You have Eriksson Ek and Zuccarello, two really good defensive forwards that you can trust to maintain possession. But why not if you're the Wild? You didn't have many moves to make at the deadline. You need points. You need the Predators to not get points. Why not go for it? Why not take the risk? I loved it. And I do hope we see it more. I'm not sure how often it's going to happen, but this is the bold strategy a team in their position should be taking.
It just seems logistically it makes sense, right? If you go 4-on-3 and you're on the attack, your fourth forward can essentially be a sweeper, right? Kind of like, the guy who gets back to defend the goal. Plus, if you're on a 4-on-3, their three are going to be probably deep in their own zone, which, is going to cut down on the chance of them breaking out and scoring into the empty net anyway. It's just, why do you think teams have taken so long to do this? Why was it John Hines to do this?
Yeah, of all coaches, you wouldn't have seen that. If Patrick Waugh did this yesterday, I don't think any of us would have been surprised. Would have been like, oh, okay, of course he had a trick up his sleeve. It just feels like in the NHL, sometimes teams don't want to take that risk. They don't want to go bold. It's all about mitigating damage instead of taking the strike when you need to. And it's so interesting here because it's not the same as, say, look at the Rangers Stadium Series game, right? They went 6-on-4 on the power play. They had nothing to lose. They were losing the game. Those right. 2 points weren't theirs to have, so you have to do something, and you have the risk of icing the puck. So that kind of raises the risk in one way, even though there wasn't a point to lose for them. For the Wild here, there is outright a point to lose. Now there's 2 points to lose that you were potentially having, but the opposing team can ice the puck. It can help you. And it's so interesting too. Sometimes when we see three defensemen out there, players get so stagnant in their positions because they don't want to, move at all out of position. And that's what can burn them in the first place. So I wonder if any other team takes note of this and thinks maybe we can do that. Maybe it's a team like the Avalanche when you have a Cale Makar that you can trust as that rover position or a Zach Werenski. Like, I wonder if we see that a little bit more than four forwards, but I mean, I'm intrigued.
You and Allison, the rover position. I've never heard the rover position brought back more than on the Too Many Men podcast. It's excellent. Speaking of awesome, whenever a trade happens, whenever a player gets moved, you throw up the Athletic rating cards, which are extremely useful. If you're not following Shayna on social media, you absolutely should be, because if nothing else, obviously for many reasons, but these Athletic rating cards for the players are very, very useful, offensive, defensive statistics. So with that in mind, trade deadline come and gone. Shayna, your personal favorite move, doesn't have to be on deadline day, just in trade deadline season. What was your personal favorite move for player and or team?
All right. So it's two moves that are linked together. I loved what the Colorado Avalanche did to take Ryan Johansson. And I know they only paid 50% salary, but that contract, I really thought he was going to bounce back in Colorado, and he very, very, very clearly didn't. To move his contract out, bring back Sean Walker in the process, and upgrade your center position to Casey Mittelstadt. Yes, you had to lose Bowen Byram in the process, is so intriguing to me because it's such a big swing move. I don't think any of us saw it coming. We all thought Sam Girard would be the defenseman to go for cap reasons, not Byram. But I really love this swing for the Avalanche. And yes, John Walker's an undersized defenseman. And you have to wonder if he'll work out in heavy hockey. Do the Avalanche have too much of the same on the blue line? But I love that they're just playing to their strengths and saying, this is what we're good at. And this is the game we play. And we've already, you know, won this way. Why not go for it again? To me, that is the most interesting move of the deadline and probably my favorite.
Cool. Which team botched it? And is it Calgary? Yeah. I should preface that. We talked about this on the trade deadline show. I wasn't really a fan of what Calgary did and the return they got. When you have the best center with an expiring contract, when you have the best defenseman with an expiring contract, and then you have the best defensive defenseman with an expiring contract. They had all the bells of the ball at the trade deadline, and I didn't like the haul they got back. But who do you think botched the trade deadline?
No, let's stick with Calgary because I think what's interesting is the timing of some of their deals, right? Zadorov, they moved early. There was a trade request. They didn't want to like rock the boat at all. And they just moved on from him. I thought that they sold a little low for someone I think we all thought would go for more, but it was no problem. You have more trade assets. Mm-hmm. It felt like they put all their eggs in Noah Hanifin's basket and they didn't get as much as you would have expected on Lindholm or on Tanev. And that's why the choice to move them so early is perplexing to me because an acquiring team is getting more of this player, right? The longer they have them, the more value they're getting from them. They should have had to pay up for that, especially if they wanted to avoid, you know, what the market price could have been a couple weeks from then. So I think that was mistake number one. Number two, it felt like they wanted it that they could clear the deck so they could focus solely on Hanifin as their biggest piece, right? The best defenseman on the market, an all-around player. It almost felt like, I know he had some control, right? Because you have that partial no trade clause, but they were so stuck on sending him somewhere he would potentially extend when, first of all, those instant extensions rarely happen. In the last, I think, 10 years, there's like four instances of them. Second of all, when they happen, teams don't get more in return for them. The Islanders didn't get more. The Canucks didn't get more for Bo Horvat because he was going to sign with the Islanders. You know, the Senators didn't get more back for Mark Stone. It doesn't make sense to tie yourself to that. At a certain point, you just have to sell him as a rental, especially when he's the one that's supposed to bring the most back to make this all work worthwhile and make up for what Tanev and Lindholm didn't bring back. It just felt like a series of rookie mistakes for me.
Mm. And it's interesting because the one guy that didn't move that a lot of people were saying probably will move from Calgary is Jacob Markstrom. He stays there. On the topic of goalies, Shayna, I'm fascinated by the fact that we didn't see more goaltenders move. I'm actually also surprised that New Jersey was the busiest goalie team and how they got rid of Toffoli, but they made big changes in net. But that got me thinking more generally about the goaltender position and deep playoff runs and Stanley Cup victories. Do we still need like that? The notion of you need a franchise goalie, an elite goaltender to win in the NHL, to even go so far as to win a Stanley Cup. Like, has the paradigm changed on that in the NHL now?
No. I think everybody is forgetting, you know, you look at Colorado and you look at the year that they won and Darcy Kemper was below average through much of the postseason after that eye injury. He was excellent all year. He was a very good goalie. And you look at the Golden Knights of last year and say, well, look how many goalies they went through. When Aiden Hill took the net, he was outstanding in the postseason. I think that you can get away with an above average goalie, not the elite, bona fide Vasilevsky, Sorokin, Saros, Shesterkins of the world, right? You can get away with that if you are so well built in front of the net. Nobody has any doubts about the Golden Knights. They had three scoring lines. They have three strong defense pairs. They have two number one defenders. They have a matchup game that nobody can stand up to. And you look at the year Colorado won, how loaded that team was as well. If you have that top-notch forward group and that top-notch defense, you can get away with an above-average goalie, but you have to be at that caliber that I don't think enough teams are. So you see a team with like the Devils who went into this year with the average tandem, and it was a risk that I think was worth taking because they were such a good possession team the year before, but it was something that they, I think, had to know we might have to change at some point because our inexperienced blue line, when you have so many subtractions, it felt like too many things happening at once for them to take that strategy of going with the average goaltender when they're a team that needs that above average goalie. A year sooner, it was a different conversation. So I think that too many teams, you look at the teams that win and you want to take notes from them and lessons from them, but you have to find a way for it to fit the roster you have unless you plan on completely, you know, hauling everything over. And that's not what teams are doing. They're saying, well, they got away with it, so can we. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. All right, last one for me. You and I both know that the New York Rangers have won one Stanley Cup since 1940. Is this the year? What do you think? Did they do enough at the deadline? Second of all, when you look at this team versus the East, versus their playoff performance last year, versus the changes that they've made under Peter Laviolette, do you like what you've seen? Could this be a year in which the Rangers bring home the Cup?
I mean, who knows, right? It's once you get to the playoffs, you never know. I think the team to beat in the East is still the Panthers. I think they were before the deadline. They have been my team to watch all year because I felt like we were underrating them because of the injuries on the back end, similar to the Boston Bruins last year. I felt like the Panthers were going to be this year's Bruins. Last year's Bruins. The Rangers, I think, could go for a deep run because you see Shesterkin rounding into form, which we all knew, you know, and he's an elite goalie. He's going to remember at some point, and he did. They have some defensive concerns still, and I don't think any roster changes were going to make much of a difference. It's their core four they need to work on. I think Lindgren has another level in his game he hasn't hit this year. I think Trouba has to be better. I think that Miller's game has been a little inconsistent. If they had not addressed their defense and at least brought in that top-notch right winger, I think I would be saying, yeah, they could be the team to beat.
Yeah.
Had they gotten the Jake Guentzel or Pavel Buchnevich or someone on that right wing to get that top line going a little bit more, I think they look better than they did going into the deadline. But I still don't have them as my team to beat. But, like, you know, you could be wrong. You really never know. They look better than they did, you know, a year ago, I think.
Yeah.
Shayna, does Cody Rhodes finish the story at WrestleMania?
No. No. Listen. You can't
no.
Believe. No.
Wow.
Nice. No, let's I go. Feel why? Like, we're going to get longer term storytelling. I feel like Cody Rhodes, I feel for him because every time you see his story develop, I feel like something gets in the way, keep dragging out, which is fine, right? Like, wrestling's a soap opera. You expect stories to just drag out when they're, you know, like, regarding the biggest belts, it's like a longer build. I don't know where else it can go from here, honestly, but I'm going to say no, that's my hot take.
Plus, he has a messiah complex, and I feel like he has to still go through more pain and anguish. And you know, whips to his back before he can actually win the belt, I think.
And probably. By the way, there are plenty of other family members that we haven't seen in WWE. We got to get through all of them before Cody wins the championship, right? The bloodline's going to be like 50 members big by the time it's all said. We're in the bottom of the fourth inning, everybody. That's where we are in the story. Shayna Goldman's the best. The Athletic Too Many Men podcast. Definitely subscribe to that podcast. Have a listen as well if you already haven't. Shayna, thank you for making time for us here today. Thanks again to Shayna Goldman for joining us here on The Drop. Let's break down our top five outrageous John Tortorella moments in honor of him getting two games and a fine that he will not pay for elongating his departure from the bench after being ejected when his team went down 4-0 in the first period. There have been some great John Tortorella moments. Now, the first thing I want to say before we get to this list is Torts was the best at ESPN. I loved working with him. Off camera, we talked a lot about family. We talked a lot about animals. He's very passionate about his horses and dogs, etc. And actually, he does. We've seen videos of him going to animal shelters and being really happy when animals get adopted. Like, there are the videos this season alone. So that's well documented. But when it comes to moments on the ice or a little bit adjacent to the ice, Wish, you've prepared for us a top five.
And your point's an important one, which is that it's like when you go to a job interview and they're like, what is your biggest flaw? And the answer everybody always gives is I care too much. Right. Because you don't want to actually criticize yourself. In Torts' case, when you look back at some of these instances we're going to talk about, and when you think about what he did in that game over the weekend, it's not because he's a jerk or it's not because he hates people and is trying to troll them or something. He just cares too much. He's the most caring guy about the thing that he's doing. And it manifests itself in the ways that it has. Okay. Top five most outrageous John Tortorella moments. This is our Jerry Springer Too Hot for TV VHS tape of countdowns. And it's very exciting.
Okay.
Number five, 2012. John Tortorella blasts the Penguins. I love this one because this is when Brooks Orpik went knee-on-knee with Derek Stepan, and then Rangers coach John Tortorella said, I wonder what would happen if we did that to their two whining stars over there, meaning Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin. It's one of the most arrogant organizations in the league, he said of the Penguins. They whine about this stuff all the time, and look what happens. It's ridiculous. But they'll whine about something else over there, won't they? Starting with their two bleepity bleep stars.
They whine about this stuff all the time, and look what happens.
Rare is the coach that has ever had a takeout of another organization and two of the biggest star players in the league in one fell swoop. But that was Tortorella back in 2012.
Mm-hmm. And why did they bleep out whining? It was in the quote earlier.
I mean, he's rarely ever deals in expletives, but
no,
that's our choice.
No. Number four.
Number four for me. Look, you could have taken any highlight in the wars between John Tortorella and New York Post columnist. I think everybody's Tortorella impression includes the word Brooksy at some point. My favorite battle, though, is when Tortorella flat out refused to answer questions from Larry Brooks after Brooks wrote a sarcastic column about then defenseman Wade Redden to the Rangers. Then Tortorella went in on Brooks and said that he was probably the kind of guy who got beat up at the bus stop as a kid and literally was asking him to stand somewhere else in the media scrum so he can continue to talk to the other reporters.
Just go stand somewhere else, would you please?
No, I won't.
This one was one of the more amusingly contentious moments between Tortorella and his foil Larry Brooks of the New York Post.
And he's done that with the Flyers as well. He has famously refused to take questions from a member of the Flyers press, which he believes with the whole Kevin Hayes.
It was Sanfilippo, I think it was, and the Kevin Hayes situation. So Torts is recycling bits now that he's in Philadelphia, I suppose. But that's okay.
Number three,
all great comedians do. Number three, my favorite Tortorella moment, but it only ranks number three on our countdown, which is when John Tortorella claimed that the Winter Classic was fixed.
Okay.
Even saying
we're in pro wrestling territory now. Okay.
Rangers coach John Tortorella was fined $30,000 by the NHL for comments critical of the league and its officials in New York's Winter Classic victory over Philadelphia. Tortorella suggested that NBC, which televised the game, and the NHL might have been in collusion to get the game tied. He said, "I'm not sure if NBC got together with the refs or what to turn this into an overtime game for two good refs. I thought the game was refed horribly. I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe they wanted to get it into overtime. I'm not sure if they had meetings about that or what." So claiming the NHL, its officials, and its broadcasting partner were colluding to get the game into overtime just to increase ratings. And he was hit by with a $30,000 fine by the NHL for that. I was there for that. My mouth is still agape at having heard that in the press conference.
Wow. Yeah, I had completely forgotten about this.
Speaking of being there for it, I was there for this in 2009, number two on our list, Arda. John Tortorella throws a water bottle and challenges Caps fans. Now, this is back 2009 Rangers Capital Series. Tortorella's coaching the Rangers. He was suspended by the NHL for one playoff game because he squirted a Capitals fan with a water bottle and then threw the water bottle into the stands, striking a spectator in Washington. He also took the stick of one of the Rangers on the bench and started waving it at the crowd behind the glass. The NHL's Colin Campbell, VP of Hockey Operations, said that investigation revealed that Mr. Tortorella squirted a fan with water before Mr. Tortorella was doused with a beverage, as a Cavs fan also threw a beer on him in that situation. This was a real sort of like when you watch videos from the 80s and 70s, you're like, can you believe that happened in hockey? And it actually was still happening in 2009 with John Tortorella and Capitals fans. So that was number two.
Yeah, and squirting water into the fans. The first image for me is Ty Domi in the penalty box, and the Flyers fan like crashes in, and the glass caves in, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose. But on this list, forevermore, I don't think this will ever be topped. There is a clear, definitive number one on this particular list, Wish.
As we talked about, John Tortorella has become a different guy. He's learned to manage his emotions. He's the zip-up sweater guy versus being the suit guy. He's changed. He's a different guy now. And part of the intriguing part of compiling this list is watching him in some of these videos and seeing a different person. And the person that you see in 2014 is a different person than you see today coaching the Philadelphia Flyers. Because in 2014, John Tortorella was suspended 15 games without pay for trying to go into the Calgary Flames locker room and fight their coach, basically. The Flames and Canucks, towards his coach and the Canucks at that point, send out their goons to start the game. It took 2 seconds for all hell to break loose. 10 skaters paired off for a classic line brawl. Tortorella was yelling at Calgary coach Bob Hartley through the benches. Fast forward to the first intermission, Tortorella's heading to the Flames locker room in search of Hartley and had to be restrained by people in the bowels of the arena lest it escalate into a coach fight. Some of that tense exchange was captured by television cameras. The NHL later excused Tortorella, suspended Tortorella, I should say, for 15 days, fined Hartley $25,000. Colin Campbell, who recently suspended Tortorella, Colin Campbell, who recently suspended Tortorella for 2 games, said Mr. Tortorella's actions in attempting to enter the Flames locker room after the first period were both dangerous and an embarrassment to the league. Coaches in the NHL bear the responsibility of providing leadership even when emotions run high, and Mr. Tortorella failed in his responsibility to the game. I'm sure Mr. Campbell felt the same recently when Tortorella refused to leave the Flyers bench.
So I want to say this one more time. If I knew nothing of John Tortorella's career and I had worked with him 2 years ago when he was with us at ESPN for that entire year, and I didn't know any of these stories and I didn't know anything about the legend that is John Tortorella as head coach in the NHL, I would be absolutely shocked, appalled. My jaw would hit the floor if I heard even one of these stories, let alone all of them. That's the impression that I have of Torts working with him. But also, it's a crazy list, Wish. It's a crazy list.
It's like when somebody wins an Oscar in their 60s, and then they're like the most respected actor in the game, and then like someone's like, "Wow, what a journey for someone who used to wreck hotel rooms
yes.
and just like do are all you, the drugs back in their 20s."
Are you saying that Torts is the Robert Downey Jr. of the NHL?
I am exactly saying that John Tortorella is the Robert Downey Jr. of the NHL, both in comportment as a younger man and in amazing facial hair.
Yes, yes. And Torts has won awards, so there you go. It all adds up. It all adds up. Thank you very much for listening or watching The Drop, whether you catch us every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN YouTube. We will see you on Friday.
Take care.